This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
It's that time. Your fix is here. College football is a year-round discussion with these two. Here's J.C. and Morgan. Mike Morgan of ESPN and J.C. Sherbert of 24-7 Sports have you covered, beginning right now.
And we say good morning and welcome. It is another installment of J.C. and Morgan. Hope everybody is doing well on the eve of the NFL draft, actually the morning, if you will, but can we use that in the morning? We are, damn it. We're breaking all the rules. In fact, we're breaking one of the primary rules, including one of our hosts. JC is out today, but we didn't want to. We've got some good momentum going here. We've been really busy with the guest line. We've had a number of national guests here the last few weeks, and then we had Mike Griffith, of all people, JD, last week, and he was terrific. Of course, he doesn't just talk Georgia. He talks everything, and that's what you and I do. Jeff Dancer filling in. We've had you as a guest on the program. For those that do not know, Jeff is a longtime member of the Georgia Radio Network. Also, some publications, and you tell the rest of your bio there of everything that you do, because you and I go back now more than a couple of decades, and we are both SEC through and through. But tell everybody out there in JC and Morgan land what it is you do on a day-to-day basis.
Well, since you've gone national, you've now gone extremely local. So you lessened your scope there. Yeah, Mike, I think we started doing shows together back in the 1990s when you were in Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah, yes.
A variety of Georgia broadcasts, and just great to be on with you, my friend. And it's always an honor. I'm so proud of you and your success and your cleverness, and you've got just such a great background there, background shot. You and Tom Cruise, clones, called by many people, going back to his varsity blues days of All the Right Moves.
Yes, always play the ball, not the man, Djurjevic. That is my backdrop. For those of you that just listen on Spotify and iTunes and what have you, you miss all the great visual elements of this show. We encourage you to check it out on YouTube if you can. No, I appreciate that. I'm so happy for guys like you and Chris Stewart, now of Alabama, who just got promoted to the football job. And, you guys are what it's all about, having that affiliation with a particular school for a long amount of time. But we're losing a lot of that. And for those that don't know, you mentioned the Columbus, Georgia days, and shortly after that, I went to South Carolina and had a great opportunity and so many great moments calling games there on radio and television. And at that time, you, me, and Chris, and I've talked about this when Chris has been on the show, we were the young guns, right? We were the youngest people calling SEC games for a particular school at the time, and we were surrounded by these much older legends like a Larry Munson at Georgia, like a Jack Crystal at Mississippi State, like a Jim Fife at Auburn. I came just after Bob Fulton at South Carolina, but he did it for 40-some-odd years there. Who am I missing? Gosh.
Yeah, John Ward at Tennessee.
John Ward at Tennessee. Yeah, Jim Hawthorne at LSU. Back then, it was just commonplace to have those guys stay with it for such a long time, and we've lost that. I mean, as you know, and I don't want to – I can say a lot more now than you can now, but corporate radio has definitely changed the landscape. So you'll probably want to put a self-imposed gag order on yourself here, Jeff, to not get in trouble. But it's a different ballgame, right, than what it used to be.
No, it certainly is. I'm just so fortunate. I've loved, as I've said, outside of my parents, I've loved the University of Georgia, the Georgia Bulldogs, longer than anything in my life. And it's really been a dream come true. Of course, we always want to do more. I've been told many times I've got a face for radio. So I'm like, yeah, I went from being the young prospect, I guess, to now just being the old veteran. And last night we had a 15 inning baseball game. My broadcast partner, David Johnson, and I, he's been with me for 25 years now in the Georgia baseball games. And
wow.
I know you did the television for the 20 inning game back in 2019. And
yes.
So we only went 15 last night. And I think I crawled in bed around 1:30 or so.
Slackers. It's so funny because you mentioned Todd Walker and I did that game almost to the day, five years ago, yep. Georgia at Clemson.
16, so it was very close to the day.
Very close, right? So 5 years ago, Todd and I do that game on the SEC network. Same exact matchup, Clemson at Georgia. The game goes 20 innings, 6 hours and 33 minutes, which is the longest game I've ever been a part of. I did an SEC tournament game back when they were on Comcast that was around 5 hours, like Kentucky, Mississippi State. And I did a Braves game once in Pittsburgh that lasted over four, maybe close to four and a half, but 6 hours, 33 minutes. So I had the picture of me and Todd literally fell asleep at around the bottom of the 18th. And I asked him a question to kind of engage him, and he literally nodded off. I said, Todd, I didn't touch him. And so I texted him the picture before the game, and the producer wanted the picture. They used that shot. Meg Powell is the producer. She's over there. She's actually does a lot of Georgia games. And they were joking about it, so they mentioned it. Well, that yesterday's game goes 15 innings. Jeff, you had it on radio, and Todd Walker was again on the TV broadcast. So I got the Todd Walker stat line for the two Clemson-Georgia games, courtesy of the producer. Two games, 35 innings, 12 hours and 13 minutes. That's – and here's the thing. It's midweek baseball, and – this is not good for anybody to have games this long. So I know you had a strong opinion right off that. We're going to get into plenty of football, trust me, but I know you had a strong opinion on the rules for extra inning games in college baseball.
Well, I think they should do what the majors do and put that runner at second base. And I think a lot of times when it comes down to proposed rules change, there's this perceived machismo of, oh, well, this is, you know, this isn't Little League. No, what you're doing, you're protecting your pitching. And especially in college, there's not a AAA, except maybe for LSU with LSU Eunice Junior College, to bring players up. So when you're stretching a bullpen that thin, and I know for both Georgia and Clemson, just for example, and this could happen to anybody, but Georgia goes to Texas A&M this weekend, and Clemson goes to Louisville. And those games are much more important. And I get it, too, when you're – in the thick of it, in the heat of battle, you're doing all you can to win. Our first year coach, Wes Johnson, who I love, he's terrific. He was the pitching coach at LSU prior. Basically, we used several of our pitchers. I think both teams used 10 last night on what would be their throw days. And he did a good job. We had a couple of guys pitching well, only threw them two innings, you know, 10, 15, 20 pitches. And it would be easy to leave a guy in for a long time. But to me, this is one where the NCAA, if they would just come in and say, hey, we're putting a guy on second base. The run rule, the SEC has got a run rule where if it's 10 runs after seven, game's over. I don't understand why the NCAA doesn't do that. The two teams, if it's non-conference, have to agree to it beforehand. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, what you're doing, you're and for lack of a better term, you're protecting yourself against yourself. But like you said, when you go 15, 18, 20 innings, nobody's a winner with that, especially in college. And it just the cumulative effect it can have, I hope it doesn't hit either team. But if one of these teams gets swept this weekend, they'll be saying, well, I wish we'd have just lost in nine this past Tuesday.
I totally agree. No, I think it's a logical and practical take. And look how long it took to get a run rule in SECs. Oh. I mean, you and I were begging for that 20 years ago. It just makes sense. Again, there's no AAA. You can't call players up. So when you have injuries or you wear out arms, there's no plan B. You can't pick up somebody off the waiver wire. Like, it doesn't work that way.
No, and it's interesting too, isn't it, in baseball? I mean, we could go down a rabbit hole here for years with what's going on, and there are a lot of different factors to it. I don't think it's just one thing, but with pitchers, for lack of a better term, being coddled more now than ever with pitch counts and inning counts, yet the injury rate is far and away the highest it's ever been for pitchers. Now, I think that goes way back to too much year-round usage with summer ball, starting when these guys are kids. The legendary Ron Polk says he thinks it's the weightlifting, and he's compared pitchers in the U.S. growing up with pitchers from Latin America who aren't doing the weightlifting and just the rate of arm injuries there. There are a lot of factors that go into it. But you see it too. And I just think for a college pitcher, what a great gig. If you're a starter, you're only going once every 7 days on the weekend. I mean, Mike, if we'd have been a Friday night ace, you get that win on the road, man, it's a good night to be had in Athens or Oxford or Columbia or Starkville for the rest of the weekend. But you still see a lot of arm fatigue out there. And I just think anything we could do to help negate that, I think is a plus for the game.
Yeah, I mean, I see it at the big league level, too. I mean, Spencer Strider is about to have his second Tommy John, you know, he's in his 20s.
I know. And when we were – and a lot of this, too, these guys – Strider's not a big guy. And it's right. All velo. I mean, he's throwing, what, 96, 97.
Yep.
And we all know that little tendon is about the I'm holding up my finger like the length. It's about as wide as a fishing line is.
Mm-hmm.
What's holding everything together. But again, I think Spencer's a great example. This guy's a tremendous, incredible talent. It's happening to him for a second time, which is just so sad. Now, when I was coming up in the 80s, back in the baseball card era, it was the rotator cuff, the shoulder injuries were much more prevalent. But now it's the elbow. It's really bizarre, and I'm sure there's some very smart people who have got better background on this. But another thing, too, I always encourage, and whether it's my friends' kids or Emily, my wife's a teacher, some of her teacher friends who have kids that play sports, play different sports. Your body needs a rest. Mm-hmm. From whatever it is, from baseball, football, basketball. Say that with football, I don't think this 7-on-7 offseason. I know Kirby, he encourages – all of our guys, run track, play baseball, play basketball, do everything you can. I mean, Kirby did the same thing. He swam competitively when he was young. Your body needs a break. Your joints, your muscles need a break from everything that they're doing. And I hate it. You know, it's one of the things in sports with football. I know when I'll flip on Monday morning and just watch some highlights and you see the ticker, NFL and guys, out for the year, out for the year. And it's an unfortunate natural byproduct of a game we love so much, just the injury rate. And you're seeing shells of what the original football team was. And unfortunately, the same thing is now the case in baseball, just with a number of pitching injuries.
No doubt. In the case of football, people love to focus on the injuries that come with hits. Most of the injuries I've covered are non-contact. What does that tell you? It tells you, to go back to Ron Polk's theory on weightlifting, you know, you can get bigger and stronger, but the joints aren't getting bigger and stronger with you. So when I see all these random injuries, non-contact injuries, I thought that for years that was a factor, that we are just putting more and more muscle, more and more torque on all these frames, but your skeletal structure, your joints, your ligaments, like they don't go along with that. They're what the body was meant to actually have.
All I can say is to quote Slim Pickens from Blazing Saddles is ditto. And if this was a text thread, I would say nailed it with some clever gif right there. You're absolutely right. Most of these ACL injuries, they are non-contact, and all your examples are right. I'd compare it to, say, on a car when you're redlining that RPM. Like you said, the joints just weren't made to take it. And the first time that hit me, you remember Jamal Anderson, the running back for the Falcons?
Absolutely.
And after they went to the Super Bowl in 98, it was the next year. It might have been the first game even. They were playing Dallas. And when he blew out his knee, and Jamal just had these massive thighs.
Tree trunks. Yeah.
Yeah, big, strong. And just watching him plant, I was just thinking the force of that going into that. I was a D-plus student in science because of excellent peripheral vision. And I can tell you that's not a natural thing. Again, I don't know what the answer is. I know there's a fine line to it. And it really is just a shame because I know for me, when you see that great pitcher hurt the arm, and I've always been going back to Herschel Walker, who was my football hero growing up. I love great tailbacks. And when you see that great back, I mean, when Nick Chubb got hurt for Marcus Lattimore at South Carolina, when you see these great backs go down, it absolutely breaks your heart. Because to me, just seeing that great tailback who could shift and sway, there's something very special to that. Same thing for that pitcher who's got the great arm, because that is just that God-given ability, and you hate to see that taken away.
I got to ask you one more baseball question before we break, and then we'll go knee-deep into football. Normally we would do the JC 5. We'll do the Mad Dog 5, our producer Phil Mullinax, and the JD 5. We're going all in on the fivers in the next segment. We've talked about this guy, Charlie Condon. I mean, you get a firsthand look at this kid. He's a remarkable story, a preferred walk-on who had a red shirt. He was kind of scrawny in a tall frame, and people were like, "Nah, you're not this level, son." And then now he is leading the planet in everything. Is he the best you've ever seen?
He's on the list. He is tremendous. And at Georgia, every school's had a lot of great ones. And for me, I've been calling the games for 30 years, so it's kind of like picking your favorite kids there. But for guys at Georgia, we've had like Jeff Kepinger and Gordon Beckham and Rich Poitras. He's right there. And you're right. He's leading the country in batting and homers and slugging and on-base percentage, hits, you name it. And of the many impressive stats, and Mike, you can appreciate this, in his 2 years in 16 SEC series, he's homered in 15 out of those series. So he's got 51 career homers, and he is just a great, great, great young man. I mean, the most excited I saw him last year is when he got into the Terry College of Business here at the University of Georgia, which is very prestigious. You have to have a GPA, which would be mine and yours put together. So I mean, we're talking about a kid, his GPA is somewhere up in the high threes, and he is just a great, great young man. And I could make it very easy for the Cleveland baseball franchise. Pick him number one. He's a great defender. He's a natural first baseman. He's playing third now. He's played center field. He's got a rocket arm. He is just a wonderful, wonderful young guy. And I think that's one of the things, too, Mike, when you go back to your days at South Carolina and you covered so many great teams for Ray Tanner, and that's back when Coach Perno had at Georgia at the top. Mm-hmm. We had so many great battles through the years. We were both in Omaha together a couple times.
Yeah.
Super regionals, SEC titles on the line, you name it. And we do spend a lot of time with these guys. And it's so wonderful. All of our guys, when they make it to the major leagues, I'm just so happy for them, and you're rooting for them to get there. And just to see a kid like Charlie having this kind of success is very special. And it's one of the things, and again, no coincidences when you're talking about the character and class of players you're getting, and a big reason that Kirby has had such great success is just bringing in guys that check all the boxes. And when I think about three of the great stars for the football team, Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, and Cedric Van Pran, I mean, these guys were incredible players, obviously, and just amazing leaders in the classroom, no trouble whatsoever. And that makes any coach's job a lot easier when your best guys are doing things the right way.
We'll talk a little bit of NFL draft. It's funny you mentioned those names because I've been just keeping an eye on all the top SEC guys at each position where they're going to go. I'm a confessed draft nerd. Like, I've been doing this since I was in high school in like 91. I don't know why, but I have a fascination with this. And part of it is because I love both college football and pro football. And I love the transition and project. Like, when you said Jamal Anderson, here's where my brain went: sixth round, Utah. So I know I'm ready for the draft. I know I'm ready for the draft and can't wait for it to happen. So we'll talk some of that going on, some news in college football as well. Jeff Dantzler from Athens, Georgia, sitting in for JC. Our producer is Mad Dog Phil Molinax. Quick timeout here. We'll come back with the Mad Dog 5 on JC and Morgan.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
Hey, folks, want to tell you about our friends at Titan Construction Group really quick. They're a mid-Atlantic-based general contractor, specializes in retail, restaurant, and office construction. TCG strives to separate itself from other general contractors by adding value every step of the process. From project budgeting to estimation, value engineering to construction, they focus on those relationships and not the transaction. Titan builds partnerships one project at a time. Among their clients are Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, Blake Pizza, Home Goods, 15 plus years experience, based in Midlothian, Virginia, and contracted in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So get on their website, TitanCGInc.com. That's TitanCGInc.com. Get in touch with Brad if you're in need of a general contractor that focuses on going above and beyond for their clients. That's Titan Construction Group, a proud sponsor of the JC and Morgan podcast.
Mike.
Listen up. This is for construction professionals, contractors, facility managers, or do-it-yourself homeowners. SitePro Rentals is ready to equip your upcoming project. We rent construction equipment for any size job. Boom and scissor lifts, telehandlers, skid steers, excavators, air compressors, generators, even small tools and equipment. SitePro has you covered. If you are ready for better equipment rental, call SitePro and rent from the local, friendly, easy to do business with equipment professionals. Call 972-RENT now. That's 972-736-8669 to rent the newest equipment in the Atlanta market. Call 972-RENT now or visit siteprorentals.com.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. made well and made right, right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable, because this movement is just beginning.
All right, we are back. Second segment here of JC and Morgan. Jeff Dancer filling in for JC on this Tuesday. By the way, there is one piece of breaking news in college football without a single thing going down, and that is Reggie Bush gets his Heisman back. Reggie will have his Heisman back. Everything is all kosher now. We can put that story to bed forever, Jeff.
Yeah, that was – I was never a fan, even when teams or schools got busted or taken down the banners.
Yeah,
we saw them win it.
Well, it's like, I you know, 2013, the last Final Four I ever attended, I saw Rick Pitino and Louisville win the national championship. You can't convince me otherwise. You can't go back in time. It happened. They won it. You can argue about – we know everybody was paying players, and it's like, it's so silly. And we laugh about this stuff now because in the era of NIL, none of it matters anyway. Everybody's buying players.
That was definitely kind of a pet peeve of mine. I remember Michigan had to take its banners down. I remember well the Fab Five going through there. And then, of course, there was the ultimate hypocrisy of Reggie Bush lost his Heisman, but another certain running back kept his.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Double murder, apparently a little more acceptable than getting the family getting the money under the table. Who knew? It is JC and Morgan, presented in part by Nest and Wild Mattress, nestandwild.com. Hopefully, Jeff, you got a few hours sleep after calling that marathon last night in Athens. If you did not, well, you need to go to nestandwild.com as well, like so many of our listeners. If you want to sleep on top of a cloud, but you will not sink in, firm edges, tremendous support in all the right places. Five Layers, local company out there in Tupelo, Mississippi, led by the founder and CEO, Brandon Jameson. Real quality. Best nights of sleep I've gotten since I've gotten my Nest and Wild mattress. You folks out there can as well at nestandwild.com. All right, Mad Dog Phil Mullinax now displayed prominently on your screen for those tuning in on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Normally, this is where JC cooks up a JC 5. We got a Mad Dog 5 to start off here. What you got, Phil?
That's right. Been in the kitchen, my JC and Morgan premiere here. But a few things off the top of my head I've been thinking about here, gentlemen. First one is with the Ole Miss, air quotes, spring game that just happened. Has Lane Kiffin's personal journey arrived him at a spot of self-awareness that he now fears himself? So going off of what Cole Kublik put forward, that maybe he was trying to shut the spring down so as not to entice other teams to go after his players in the portal, has the Portal King come to realize that that could happen to him?
What's good for the goose, right, JD? I mean, he is poaching players left and right. When Lane is near your campus or he's making phone calls, you might want to get a little nervous. And so this, I don't know if you saw this, Jeff, but the theory put forth by Cole Kublik vis-a-vis Greg McElroy, they do a show together in Birmingham. And I hadn't thought of this before that was put forward, but it makes sense. The Ole Miss spring game was kind of a joke. I mean, but they were in on the joke. It was like a festival. You had slam dunk contests. You had Joey Chestnut eating hot dogs. Guys flipping tires. Nobody's wearing pads. 7-on-7. You and I have seen the demise of the spring games over the years. But the other thing about it is, instead, in the addition of worry to being about players getting hurt, what have you, is that you don't want to showcase some of your backups who could then be poached in the portal, because we have a portal period going on right after the spring games. What do you think?
I think the whole thing is completely absurd. What's happened with the combination of NIL, the transfer portal, the timing of the portal, the fact that one's going on for basketball during the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
It's there's been, but this is what happens when the NCAA had their head in the sand for 30 years. And now that they're just having the open transfers go, and people can debate, is it good for this? Is it good for that? Is it good for the game? Absolutely not. So I love the Sith Jedi Skynet self-awareness question coming. And just yeah, so to
very
answer,
meta.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just for George, I'll give you an example. We had a backup running back, Andrew Paul, who got hurt his freshman year, played some last year as a redshirt freshman, had a really good spring game, boom, jumps in the portal. I'm sure he got contacted by someone. And, I mean, what was it, Quinshon Judkins, you know, leaves Ole Miss to go to Ohio State. There is going to be an erosion of popularity with the game. And I think also going up and continuing to hit up donors for NIL money to try and keep kids when there's no promise of the loyalty. And well, there, you know, coaches can leave. Well, they can, and you can argue that all they want, but this is not good for the game. And I'll tell you, for Kentucky basketball, one of the big problems, and Mike, I'm sure your beautiful other half can speak to this, with John Calipari, with the one and done, that's all well and good when you're winning big, but you better win big every year because your fans don't know your players. And right. That's part of what makes it special. And I think for me, just to put it simplistically, growing up, you played high school where you grew up. You played pro where you got drafted. You chose where you went to college. And that is still the case to a large degree, but it's much more heavily influenced. And there was always a point of pride when your team won, mostly with players from your state who wanted to go to your school where you went to school. And to me, that is the essence of your school pride and your regional pride for college athletics. And I'm just afraid that a lot of that is in jeopardy. Now, I think we're still going to show up for the games. Maybe it'll be a gradual lessening. I hope not. But I know this: the off season is not nearly as fun. With everything going on now, an expansion of playoffs, I mean, to where you could have to play 16 or 17 games to win the title, not knowing who's going to be back from year to year. I know for me, just oftentimes when I'm out walking around, you guys probably do the same thing, just coming up with different ideas, or I like to try and look ahead for another year or two. It just doesn't make it as fun to do right now. So hopefully it might get worse before it gets better, but at some point, I think all of this is going to self-correct because it is absolutely unsustainable and not good for college athletics, in my opinion.
I couldn't have said it any better. And you just said it from the point of view of a guy who's actually covered a program that's winning. So it's not soured grapes. You're right in the middle of Titletown here of late and the most successful college football program over the last few years. And still you recognize there are some things about the system right now that are clearly broken and need a correction of some sort. Mr. Announcer, can we get Mr. Announcer in here, Phil? I want to show off our high-level production that we have, JD. We didn't have this when we had you on a couple of years ago. Pave the way for number two, please.
Number two.
All right.
See, big
Jeff,
time. We
spare no expense for production on JC and Morgan.
So, gentlemen, spring games, since we're talking about that. Spring games are the traditional spring game, obviously, is not working for some. But what's better, having a spring game, doing, say, a secret scrimmage, a la what basketball programs do to bring in another Power Five team and just play, you know, see how your team shines against different same level talent, or would you be in support of maybe a game or two in a college football preseason against, say, an FBS opponent?
Well, I'll start this one. I think some of these ideas are juicy for the fans, but coaches will never go along with them. They're never going to do a preseason game. It's just never going to happen. The spring game, playing an actual opposing university, has always been out there as something that, wouldn't it be great if, and again, from a fan's perspective, we love it. We're all in. Give us something. Give us something to tune into. You know, the NFL has what's going to go on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's kind of their spring game. And fans line up. I mean, you're going to have tens of thousands of people in Detroit, just like you had it in Nashville, just like you'll have it in whatever city it's going the following year. And they're sitting there with their magazines, and they're keeping up with, you know, who they're going to draft, who's going to help their team. That is their spring game. That is something that for them that is juicy and they can get psyched up about. And then you've got the talk about free agency, and NFL's become a 12-month-a-year sport. College football would love to have something like that. In years past, it was spring football. It was getting updates on what was going on in practices, which used to be open to the media. Very few are anymore. And then the spring game, to go and watch your team and see if that backup quarterback is the future, to see if that five-star freshman can actually play at this level. And then we started televising these games on ESPN and the ACC network, and they actually resembled games. Yeah, you couldn't take out the quarterback. He still had a non-contact jersey on, but there were people hitting, and their receivers were running legit routes, and there were battles going on the line of scrimmage. All that is gone, and I don't think it's ever coming back, and I don't think coaches have the stomach to play against another team and risk injury or risk just looking bad. Jeff, I don't think any of these are viable options, although as fans, we love the sound of all of it.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those deals. It's kind of like the NFL's trying to fix the Pro Bowl. Well, the Pro Bowl is what it is. I mean, it's spring football. I thought George had a very good spring game, and part of what does make it interesting for a lot of schools, for instance, in Athens, we had 22 of our signees were early enrollees. So you get a chance to get that sneak peek in there. And again, just a diatribe here, and I'll try to get back on point. If not, you can shock me like in Ghostbusters. But the other that college football needs a workable timeline again. The early signing day has had some bad unintended consequences, and they need to do away with that. But the fact that you have the portal and then early signing day, both coming before players announce when they turn pro or not, is a huge problem. You know, it used to be, this is not an old man yells at cloud like Abe Simpson. When I say it used to be, this is just like 7 years ago. You know, you play your season, you play your bowl game, then you decide whether you turn pro or not, and then there's signing day. And what you mentioned, Mike, and that's a great point about the NFL, and I love the draft as well. But what's happened now, signing day has lost all of its zest. And you remember that used to be signing day in the Super Bowl, depending on how the calendar fell. It was that last reprieve of football before you entered the abyss of that terribly long offseason there. So I think getting a workable timeline would just help in every way. And I know Kirby and Coach Saban were really pushing Greg Sankey to do just that. And I think, and again, I understand the premise of the early signing day, but just don't have it. Let's just go back to signing day. I just think that would be a big help. They also have to get organized with when you're going to have the portal openings, presuming we're going to continue to have it. And again, I think with the spring game, what you're seeing is we've got this ultimate battle going on here, and especially with the portal. Fans are more hungry for information than ever. And I can remember growing up in Statesboro, when we started being able to get the home delivery of the Atlanta Constitution, they used to have a big page during the fall that would have an update on every team's practice every day. And you would just, there's so much now on the internet. Fans are hungrier than ever for information. Coaches are more secretive now. and want to keep things under wraps more than ever. So it's creating a bit of a kind of putting two magnets against each other, kind of a headbutting situation. And going back to what you brought up about Lane Kiffin, and I mean, we're not going to have a spring game because you're worried that another school is going to see a good player of yours and try to steal him. The logic behind that, when, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, oh yeah, you're going to put our spring game on TV. This is a great way to promote our program.
Right.
Get people to our campuses. I don't even want to say this stuff's come full circle. I mean, I think it's 180 degrees the other way. It's a crazy time right now. I certainly still enjoy the game days as much as ever, but there's basically been more change in the past 4 to 5 years, and all of it rapid, I think, than there'd been maybe in the previous 140 years of college athletics put together. And it's happened quick. It's definitely been the most since the SEC and the Deep South integrated back in the early 70s. But to throw in the portal, NIL, a playoff now, just the number of games that are being played. And sometimes I think less is more. I always kind of like that season ending on New Year's Day. Now you're talking about going into late January, an injury factor. I also think an interest factor. And I mean, one of the things about college athletics, it's a volume sport. If you ask football fans in the NFL, do you look forward more to a Sunday in October or the Super Bowl? A lot of fans are going to say Super Bowl. For college, do you look more forward to the national championship game on a Monday night in January, or do you look forward to an October Saturday when Georgia's playing Auburn, Tennessee's playing LSU, Alabama's playing South Carolina, Florida's playing Texas A&M, Michigan's playing Michigan State? And I think the answer is the latter for that one, and that's why you kind of get back to the roots of it. While New Year's Day was so huge, back when college football didn't know what it was doing and we only had one game a week on TV back in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, what made New Year's Day so great was that you had 4 or 5 games that were on the same day with great teams and great games, just proving, again, it's that volume sport. I mean, what's the best part of the NCAA hoops tournament? To me, it's the first 2 days because you've got all these games. And I just think that's something that's very important to remember as we continue to try and expand and expand and expand. You might be lessening, and you've definitely cheapened the regular season with every expansion of the playoff, including a tripling of this one, which has to be unprecedented in the world of sports.
A lot to unpack there, and I agree with a lot of what you said. Before people think this is a complete get off my lawn segment, there's a lot of things about college football today that I love more than we were growing up as kids. I posted this on Twitter the other day, at Morgan on Air. What are you, Jeff? At
Jeff Dancer TV.
Jeff Dancer TV. Okay. I showed a picture. I think it was, it was Oklahoma lined up in the wishbone. And I said, I grew up watching this, and I'm paraphrasing my own words here. Like, you know, it was nice at the time, but I don't miss it. I don't miss option football. I think the game has never been more advanced, more exciting to watch. I like the fact that all the game, and yes, you know, I do work in television, but I also, just as a fan, I love the fact that I can tune in to any game I want to on TV, as opposed to just like being stuck with the same 10 teams every week on the old ABC, CBS game of the week. I do not miss the AP and the UPI and all those other polls voting on who should be the mythical national champion. I don't miss split national championships. I don't miss the BCS and computer polls. There's a lot of things that the game has advanced. You know, I think overall the product on the field has never been better. And I've always wanted and begged for a playoff and heard a million what I thought half-assed excuses on why we shouldn't have one, and we have one. There's a lot of really good things. I don't want this to be completely get off my lawn. But we have, to your point, ventured into a territory that is, I don't want to say dangerous, because I think that's being a little melodramatic. Like, here's what I've always said about college football fans, Jeff. And you just pointed out a lot of things that can turn people off. And I know I hear it from college football fans. A lot of the changes are turning fans off. You're right. But here's what I know about the college football fan in deference to, say, the Major League Baseball fan, many of whom just completely gave up on the sport back after the 94 strike. A Georgia Bulldog fan, no matter how much you try to ruin the sport, change the sport, no matter how much more you gouge me financially to get tickets or to take part in certain events as a fan, he's still watching every Saturday. He's still into it. He still gives a damn. That's never changing. And the same thing with Texas fans and Florida fans and South Carolina fans and Tennessee fans. They're not going anywhere. The sport has never been more popular. The only thing that even comes close to competing with NFL games, it ain't the NBA, it ain't Major League Baseball, it's college football. So I do think there's still a lot of things to be excited about. It's just we clearly have entered uncharted waters with a rudderless ship and no captain to guide us back to shore.
I would agree with a lot of that too, Mike. And I think we're on the same page, just might have some disagreements. It's kind of like in politics. I think for most of us, there might be 18 issues, and probably most reasonable people can agree on 15 of them.
Right.
I'm just if there's an Iron Bowl one day and both teams are 11-0 and you're resting your starting quarterback, that's a problem. That's something I don't like. And that happens in the NFL. I mean, right. Like that. So, Michigan, Ohio State, well, we're going to rest them. We're going to make the playoff anyway. But
I worry about, Jeff, I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to get to that point. But what I do worry about, I know I could be wrong. Your logic is not wrong, because it does happen in the NFL. And if we did have two undefeated teams in the Iron Bowl, you certainly could play it cautious, knowing you're still going to make the playoff. Everything you said is right. I think the bigger concern for Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti right now is conference championship games.
I agree. That's something I think they're useless. So if you ask me right now for Georgia, and because you pretty much said conference titles don't matter anymore, before the ESPN playoffization of it, there was not a national championship obsession. It was about if you won your league, if you beat your rival, if you went to the big bowl game. Well, now, one of the things, too, with college football, with the regular season, I always felt college football, the NBA had the best champions because you had 4 out of 7. It wasn't the one and done get knocked off. And nobody in the history of the world's ever said, hey, the 11th best team in the country deserves a shot at the national championship. College football, the 11th best team's going to have a shot at it now. So just making that regular season where it meant everything is what made college football so special to me. It also gave us a whole lot of heartburn through the years, because for that ultimate dream, that loss could set you back. I think kind of moving forward, as I'm clearly stuck in the past, it reminds me of a friend of mine from Noonan, Georgia, the late, great Clay Bryant. Noonan's one of those towns. It's kind of one-third Georgia, one-third Auburn, one-third Tech. It's down 85 close to Auburn.
Like Columbus.
There you go. And he said there was an old judge there who had kind of lost it. And he was a big Auburn fan. And his kids and grandkids just brought him these VCR tapes of these old Auburn games, all wins. So he was 90-something, and he would just watch. He'd come to the lunch counter and they'd say, oh, my God, we got this guy, Bo Jackson. He's unbelievable. And so that's probably going to be me one day. Just, oh, my God, we got Herschel Walker. Now we got this guy, Brock Bowers. We're going to win them all. So I know in many ways I am stuck in the past. Kirby is so great about moving forward, so I'm trying to learn from our masterful head football coach. I think one thing that has given me some hope is if the SEC and Big Ten can come together and then other schools just jump in on that. The key to all this, and I've heard Rick Neuheisel say this, we've got to get the money even. Greg Sankey is the best commissioner in sports. His job is to make money for the SEC. His job is not to do what is best for college football. And now, oftentimes, it winds up being mutually beneficial. But if we can stop the leagues from fighting each other for different pieces, get everybody on the same page and agree that, hey, listen, you're all going to be making more money, then I think that gives you a chance to put in some guidelines with the other things that we've talked about. And if college football went to the table, I think unified. Now, could you get NFL money? No. But I think you could get much closer than any other sport could. So at least I think the SEC and Big Ten talking together, trying to get on the same page, is a big potential step in the right direction.
Well, you opened up a can there, because I have a lot of thoughts on where I think we're headed with the SEC and Big Ten kind of dominating the world. But that it's like a game of risk at this point. It's like when Newman is...
Ukraine not weak.
Yes, it's like Newman and Kramer playing a game of Risk and then taking the board on the subway.
That's
yes,
us, plenty. Mike. We're two idiots that can't even run our own lives, and we're trying to run football.
Very true. Very true. All right, Phil, next one, please. Announcer.
Number three.
All right. Eight teams that are moving into former Power Five conferences this year have in the past 10 years won their previous conference championships. Oregon, Washington, Southern Cal, Stanford, Utah, Texas, Oklahoma, and SMU. Of that eight, who has the best chance of winning their new conference the fastest?
First, that's a great question. That's a great little water cooler fun fact of the day for those that still have a water cooler in their office. I know cutbacks might be taking that away here in this new economy, but for those that still have a water cooler and your boss is kind enough to bless you with fresh water to consume, those schools that Phil just mentioned, all in the last 10 years winning yep. their conference championships. Jeff, I'll let you take first crack at that, and I'll give you my thoughts.
I'll say Texas.
Yeah, that was my number two. You know what I'm going with? I'm going Utah.
That was my pick. Yep.
I'm going. Kyle Whittingham to me is the most underrated coach in the sport, and I'm taking Utah to be the Big 12 champion sooner rather than later. But I think Texas is going to be. I said this yesterday on another show. I think Texas, for those that have enjoyed their reign of mediocrity under Herman and Strong and watching them lose games to Kansas and even Sark. I mean, it didn't happen in year one, but for those that enjoyed their downturn, I think they're on the rise, and I don't think the SEC is going to be a hindrance to that. I think it's going to help it, because now they have the last piece of the ultimate recruiting tool. Not only do you have all the money, not only do you have all the facilities, now you can say we are in the SEC. That was used against them for years in recruiting. But I don't think they're ready to win it just yet in year one or year two. But I think Utah could.
Yeah, I think Utah is very good. But that's another issue there with the playoff and the top four conference champs still getting a bye. It blows my mind that even after all the changes with the disintegration of the Pac-10, 12, and nothing says Big Ten rivalry like Washington against Rutgers or a showdown like Stanford versus Virginia, the absurdity of what's happened with conference expansion, which I think is the biggest problem of all, but because college athletics is so much about regional rivalries. So what's going to happen then? It's eventually going to come down to the two leagues, and it's going to form one big thing, and you're going to have divisions that are then going to be like the conferences were. I mean, there's going to be a Big Ten Pacific division. I think we can see all of that coming. So, but the fact that they didn't rewrite the playoff rules, so now you could have a 9-3 Kansas State against a 10-2 Arizona, and they're going to get a bye. And let's say Texas and Alabama are both 12-0. The loser of that is going to have to play 17 games, because you're going to have to turn around and play in that first round. It's absolutely absurd, the lack of organization with this.
Next up, Phil.
Number four.
Is an unintended consequence of player empowerment manifesting right now to accept mediocrity in coaching for fear of losing virtually an entire roster to the transfer portal?
You're going next level on that one. So explain to me the what you're saying is.
So are universities accepting, say, mid coaches to preserve high talent rosters?
So, like, you'd rather have a mediocre coach that's good at roster management?
Well, you keep one around a little longer than they're, you know, than they need to be around. I think Florida, right? Like, take Billy Napier at Florida. Mm-hmm. Napier's success relative to expectations, I would think we would all agree, is low. Mm-hmm. Is one of the things that's stopping Florida from just yanking the, you know, rug out from under him, the fact that he can recruit. And then he does actually have a very talented roster, just doesn't appear to have the ability,
okay,
coaching-wise, to put it together and get it moving.
It's the age-old argument, Jeff. Like, would you rather have a great recruiter that maybe isn't the best X's and O's guy, and we see a lot of these in basketball, or would you rather have the old-school tactician, I can coach ball like against anybody, but maybe he's not the best recruiter, especially in the new era of NIL and players?
It's a good question. We're just so fortunate at Georgia we got both with Kirby Smart. But I think another part of that, and I don't know if we're allowed to cuss on this show or not, but
bring it.
All of my buddies who played football at Georgia 80s, 90s, and basketball, baseball, you name it, said basically every great coach I've ever been around is a hard ass.
Yeah.
And at times. So now, you know, you're talking about some adjustments of, well, you know, I'm not playing enough, I'm just going to leave. So could that perhaps change the personalities of what you're looking for? And I think that's a great question. And I'll take it a step further. Would Bob Knight work today at Indiana? And we're talking about one of the greatest coaches ever. Now, there were some, I think we could say, as Coach Dooley would have said, some personality flaws there. But I think that's a legitimate question. And, yeah, is it more, I think, are some schools saying, all right, we're just going to get more of that roster management guy and then hope that we can get maybe the assistants to do some of the analytics and X's and O's.
I think it depends where you're coaching too, right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, like, if you are a quote unquote hard ass, but you're at a marquee university with a lot of financial resources, then the kid's going to be more likely to say, yeah, I can put up with him. I mean, I've had worse than that. If I do wrong, my mom will whip my rear end. So I can deal with a coach who's going to yell at me and make me better and has a track record of turning guys into pros. I mean, Dan Hurley is certainly a hard ass at mm-hmm. UConn, and he doesn't tell parents what they want to hear. He tells them flat out, this is what I expect and this is the way it's going to be. And obviously it's worked for him. Kirby is no softy, and no. Obviously it works for him.
They're both doing it from a position of strength, though. I would
correct,
say.
Correct, correct. Yeah. Well, that's where I say it depends the job that you get. If you're going to have that same hardline, old school approach and you're coaching at Memphis or you're coaching at, you know, I mean, I'll even give an SEC example, Mississippi State, for example. Like, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do that because it just gives players another excuse the moment things aren't going well to put my name right in the portal. I'm convinced 90% of the time kids going in the portal now, it's purely about the money anyway. But there is that 10%, because I mean, you've got guys that are playing, that are starting. Like, ETN's going to be the tailback for Georgia. He started and he was the man in the backfield for Florida. So why did he leave? Dare I say money? I mean, South Carolina had two kids.
Line, a much better offensive line as well.
Well, that's true. There's no question. And so
play into money. He has helped his pro stock. Would you agree?
Who's that?
ATN.
By transferring?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, because he's going to be more successful. Although I'm convinced the NFL scouts, for all the misses that they have on the draft, they do their due diligence. Like, they understand a running back averaging 6 yards a game behind Georgia's offensive line versus a running back averaging 5.1 behind Florida's offensive line, that you have to be smart enough as a scout to realize the two are not the same, right?
I just think,
being a quarterback in Lane Kiffin's offense at Ole Miss, if you're Jackson Dart, versus being that same quarterback at Vanderbilt, right? You're not going to put up the same numbers. You're not going to have the same time to throw. But they still saw enough in Jay Cutler to take him in the first round out of Vandy. Like, scouts should be able to see through some of that.
Sure. My point I was making with ATN, and I totally went on a tangent, and I apologize. He ran so hard in the spring, and I think he knows he's getting that push up in front of him. You're going to see a more complete back. But you're also getting to, for me, I grew up a Yankees fan. So I hated Wade Boggs because I loved Don Mattingly. And I thought Mattingly was a better hitter. But I'm like, he's just a little punch and Judy, just slapping it out there. And then lo and behold, the Yankees win the World Series, and there's Wade Boggs riding around on a horse on Yankee Stadium with a police officer. And I give it the Jerry Seinfeld thing. You're rooting for Laundry, which right. I think had an erosion, a slow erosion in the popularity of pro sports for a lot of fans. Not all. I get it. The money's still there. That's what I worry about for college athletics, is that this guy went from Florida to Georgia. And the other thing, too, with the portal, we're all hypocrites with it. I mean, I don't like it, but at the same time, if ATN's having a great year for the Dogs, awesome. So it's
– yeah.
Again, it's just one of those areas where we got to be careful. And it all just happened so quickly. I just don't want to get back. We always come back to Seinfeld, don't we? Where you're rooting for Laundry.
Rooting for Laundry. I actually met Wade Boggs at a bar in Ocala right during the strike. And an inebriated Mike my friends were daring me to go up to him and say something. I had no idea what to say. I went up, I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, "Mr. Boggs." And then I paused. I said, "I'll have to clean this up for the show. Blank the salary cap, man. Blank it." And he said, "Yeah," we did a high five. That was my moment with Wade Boggs. True story. I'm not. And the truth of the matter is, I think there should be a salary cap in baseball. But I wasn't about to contradict Wade Boggs' best wishes after he had three pitchers at a country western bar in Ocala, Florida. And with that, Phil, number five.
That's right. Number five.
All right. Purely hypothetical in the land of make-believe. If conference affiliation were required to for consideration into, say, some iteration of the college football playoff here in the future, could a conference comprised solely of private institutions be competitive enough to regularly make the playoffs? And that being said, it would probably play hell in baseball and basketball, but mm-hmm. could they do it on a football field?
What do you think, JD?
Yeah, I think if you're talking about nationwide, because I mean, you got Miami and you got Southern Cal there.
See, that's what I'm thinking, too, is that you could bring in some of these independents that are traditionally thought of like large, you know, public universities. I mean, Notre Dame is independent. But if the playoff committee said you have to join a conference, could some of them just be like, you know what? We've got enough star power behind us to create our own. And put 12 teams together, you know, and yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are enough private schools out there. You know, there was a push, and I'll probably miss a couple of the schools back in the 60s to form. I don't know if you guys ever heard of this, just along those lines, to form what's called the Magnolia Conference, which was going to be some of the elite academic institutions from around the South. So it was basically going to be Duke, Wake, I think Tech, Tulane, Miami, Rice, a couple more thrown there. They were going to form their own. It was going to try and be basically a Southern Ivy League. I thought, you know, there was something to that. But yeah, something along those lines. The whole matter is, are they written into it the way the playoff goes. But with private schools, and you nailed it, especially with baseball, the things they can do with the scholarships. And we've seen it with Vandy, with TCU, of course, mm-hmm. traditionally USC and Miami. They're just playing by a different set of rules.
Yeah, that's food for thought. It's I still think where we're headed, whether it's good or not, SEC, Big Ten, they're going to add more. Clemson and Florida State are determined to get out of the ACC, and eventually that's a financial settlement that'll make that come true. And at that point, where is the ACC? The Big 12 has done everything they possibly can to stay relevant. I applaud the moves they made, but they're going to be dwarfed, much like the ACC is. And, of course, we know the Pac now has gone the way of the dodo. You're going to be left with, and it's going to be real chilly outside if you're not let into one of those two parties. You know, you're going to be playing Division One, technically speaking, but the financial resources are going to be, the gap is going to widen to a point where it's going to be awfully hard to compete.
And awfully hard. Not playing Oregon State, they're going to be playing Rutgers, and I will always be grateful to the Big 12 when things were looking dodgy back in 2020, when they came out and said, we are playing football this fall. Yeah. We are planning on it, all plans going forward. And it was within the week, because the ACC was going to do what the SEC did. And the SEC and ACC at that point said, we're jumping in. And then, of course, the Big and the Pac were laying back, and then their players started speaking out. And they came in late. But in that most turbulent of times of 2020, when we so needed to play, I will always be grateful for the Big 12 sticking its neck out there first and getting the ball rolling in a positive way.
Amen to that. All right, we got to take one more timeout. When we come back, we'll go tempo. We'll go no huddle. We will rifle through the JD5. JD's bringing content here. Last second edition, filling in for JC Sherbert. It is JC and Morgan back in just a few.
Listen up. This is for construction professionals, contractors, facility managers, or do-it-yourself homeowners. Site Pro Rentals is ready to equip your upcoming project. We rent construction equipment for any size job. Boom and scissor lifts, telehandlers, skid steers, excavators, air compressors, generators, even small tools and equipment. Site Pro has you covered. If you are ready for better equipment rental, call Site Pro and rent from the local, friendly, easy to do business with equipment professionals. Call 972-RENT now. That's 972-736-8669 to rent the newest equipment in the Atlanta market. Call 972-RENT now or visit siteprorentals.com.
Chicken cock originated in Kentucky, like so many other bourbons. And so the resurrection of it, you know, Paris, Kentucky, that's the county seat of Bourbon County. So much of this whiskey was being made in that Bourbon County, put on ships and barges and shipped down Ohio, down the Mississippi, and got to New Orleans, where it got distributed all over the world. And people kept saying, well, hey, I want some more of that whiskey from Bourbon County. And so that's how bourbon whiskey got its name. And chicken cock originated actually in Paris, Kentucky, which is today Bourbon County.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Back with you with the final segment of JC and Morgan. We've been bouncing around, by the way, recording this live on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, we'll get back into a flow of a specific date, day of the week, rather, each and every week. Sometimes work schedules, travel schedules, all kinds of schedules, it does vary a little bit. Such is the case this week, such is the case with JC, who's out today. He'll be back with us next week. Our friend of the program, Jeff Dantzler, of the Georgia Radio Network and of many other publications, and also has his own show, which would be a great addition to the Chief Sports Network, which we're on, I just might add. Tell everybody out there about the show, Jeff, that you do each and every day.
Noon to one on the Superstations, group of nine stations in southeast and central Georgia. My good friend Bill Shanks owns the stations, and I tried to convince him seven times not to hire me. I've just got so much going on with Georgia, but he said, can you do an hour a day from your apartment? Yes. So that's my limit right there. Nose to the grindstone for an hour a day. So I'm enjoying it, and I love it when you come on with me. So that always beefs it up. No, I think it'd be great.
And for those wondering what Jeff does the other 23 hours a day, he works on the Penske file. He's truly Penske material.
Penske material. Penske's too. I've got five for you if you're ready.
Let's bring it. The JD5. No huddle. Red Razor. Black 59 left. Black 59 left. No huddle. Here we go.
All right.
Number one.
Oh, sorry about that, Mr. Announcer. That you've seen in person, and I'm so proud of you doing the NFL stuff. I'm very jealous you get to do that. But the college quarterback, running back that you've seen, if you had to pick an all-star, and the best NFL that you've seen in person, like quarterback, running back duo, if you had to pick Mike Morgan dream team.
So one of all time and then one that I've seen in person?
That you've seen. Like for me, like – I don't know. Joe Montana is the best pro quarterback I've seen in person. And I don't know. Tony Dorsett, the best pro running back. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I've been fortunate the last 3 years of doing NFL on national radio for Compass. I've had a few Pat Mahomes games. So there's my quarterback. I mean, I just marvel. And I get to go.
Anybody who's ever played. I mean, the guy.
Yeah.
I'm great. Yes.
And you know what's interesting about that, JD, on the eve of the NFL draft? I called this is back when I was at Fox. I called two of Pat Mahomes' games in college at Texas Tech. And I'd be lying if I told you I knew he was going to be one of the greatest to ever play the game at the next level. He was good, but so was everybody else that played quarterback at Texas Tech in that system, right? So, but going down on the field and watching him even warm up, I'm just in awe. Like, I turn into a little kid, just like, oh my goodness. He'll start goofing around and like throwing the ball sideways and behind his back and all this like stuff. And it's just like, wow, he's as good. And I got to do a couple of Brady's games in Tampa, obviously at the tender age of 43, 44, a little bit different, but still in awe of seeing the GOAT. But in terms of just pure raw ability, Mahomes as a quarterback, running backs in person, Gosh. The position's been so devalued, man. Like I look at the upcoming draft and running backs are rare to even go in the first round anymore. You know, the Gurley, to use a Georgia example, the Gurley run, he wouldn't have gone in the first round in today's draft. Not because he wasn't good, but teams just are like, Bijan Robinson went top 10 of the Falcons. And I could even second guess that, quite honestly. Because as good as he is now, is he going to be good in 4 years when you sign that second mammoth contract and I can get some running back in the fifth, sixth round? As a fan, I was just sitting in the stands, I got to see Marshall Faulk. The Marshall Faulk was ridiculously good. You know, I think people forget how quickly we forget how good Marshall Faulk could still play today and be, because he was, before there were the Christian McCaffreys of the world that could catch and play wide receiver and running back, there was Marshall Faulk. There was a guy like that. So I'll go with him as my running back.
And Mike, contrary to reports in the Sun out of London, had nothing to do with the breakup of Tom Brady and Giselle. Moving on. In person, best college baseball player you've ever seen?
Oh gosh. This is before I got to do to broadcast college baseball, but Todd Helton.
That's mine too. I say this because I love all my Georgia guys. I always say he's the best player I've seen play against Georgia. So there
Todd,
we go.
And Todd Helton still holds the SEC record for most consecutive scoreless innings to give people an idea how good he was. A Hall of Famer as a bat, right? But he also was an ace pitcher out of the bullpen for Tennessee. Yeah. He's the best combo guy that I ever saw. And I've seen some great ones like you have come through. I mean, you talk about the days at South Carolina. Steve Pierce was one of the best pure hitters I ever saw. And he only played 2 years because he was a JUCO guy. Had he played three, he would have rewritten a lot of record books, and he wound up being a World Series MVP at the next level. You know, just to give an example, if you want to just talk pure college, like Kip Balknight was a Golden Spikes Award winner in 2000. He was outstanding. But yeah, none were better than Todd Helton all around. He was phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm hearing the Tom Price come out in your voice. But yeah, Helton led the SEC in batting, RBIs, doubles. I think he was third in homers, also in saves, ERA, and strikeouts per nine innings. And he started at quarterback. He had a Peyton Manning for a while.
Tim Hudson was pretty good, too. Led the SEC in RBIs 1 year and was a dominating pitcher as well, obviously at the big leagues as well.
He went 15-2, and I think hit .375 with 17 homers. So he was phenomenal. Number three, and I'm just getting this a rule or a scheduling change you'd like to see. Like for me, I'd love to see the Masters, when there's a playoff, do a three-hole aggregate at Amen Corner, 11, 12, and 13. So give me a and once again, I haven't been consulted by the membership on this, which I can't understand why. So give me a rule / scheduling change that you'd like to see.
Well, shoot, I'll go with that. You're wearing your Augusta jacket now. Speaking of envious, I don't have any Masters swag. That's not true. I've got a towel. I've got a Masters towel, even though I still haven't been, which is embarrassing for me, my family, and everybody ever associated with me. Well, you mentioned one. I mean, I think in college baseball, for example, we don't need a 20-inning Tuesday night matchup. Just put the runner at second and let's go ahead. And in the regular season, I'm all for that. There's 56 regular season games in college baseball. I'm trying to think specifically of college football. You know, they're adding the 2-minute warning. I'm down with that. I'm okay with that. You know what? Here's one rule I want to see changed in college football, and you might disagree with me, Jeff, because you definitely might be a little more resistant to change, let's just say. So you might yell, get off my lawn on this one. I don't like the rule. Let's say a defensive back intercepts a pass and he's got like a clear path to the end zone, but he slips and falls. Maybe it's a wet turf and then he's down. He's ruled down in college. I like the NFL rule. If he's not touched, he's not down. He can still get up and go. Every other rule is changing toward the NFL anyway. Why don't we morph that one where if a guy slips and falls, but he's completely untouched, he can still get up and go.
All right. Coming up next, scheduling. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Because one thing, and Mike, we cover all the sports in the SEC. I think basketball starts too early. I think it should start around December 1st. I would not mind baseball getting pushed back 2 or 3 weeks, running deeper into July. And I know their thoughts on both ends. In the SEC, why would we give up that edge? But I'm just telling you, and you know this, when Michigan made the final in 2019, the TV rating went up. So if you're talking about bringing Michigan, Washington, Ohio State, Nebraska, Penn State, those teams into the fold with college baseball, I think there's a lot of money there. So that would be I wish college hoops would start basically first week of December, and I wouldn't mind if college baseball was, say, 3 weeks later. Any other scheduling ideas or things? And I hate the PGA being in May. It should be back in August. So some scheduling things that you would change if you were the master of the universe.
Yes, as well I should be. Well, you just stole my thunder. I've said this for years. The calendar is off in college athletics. It just is. TBH is what I used to say, turkey before hoops. College basketball should not be playing games on November the 3rd when everybody's clearly in football mode. Start it. If you want to start it with the Thanksgiving tournaments, I'm down with that. Let that be your first games. Let it kick off then. We're already playing the Final Four in April, so you don't have to worry about losing the moniker of March Madness. We'll still start the tournament in March, but it will finish in April, as it already does with the Final Four. And for goodness sake, anybody who's been to a college baseball game in February, where there's virtually nobody in the seats, and it's a cold day, and you're just miserable trying to gulp down hot chocolate or whatever you can get your hands on, whether you're in the stands or like us in the booth, is no need for it. Why we're playing college baseball in February is beyond me. It's ridiculous. So I've always thought that. The calendar is off. Yes, is it an edge to Southern schools? Yeah, but do we need that edge, really? There's enough edges already for the Southeastern schools. You don't need to have the Northern schools just play every game on the road for February and March. I'm totally with you on both those things in terms of scheduling. You know, we're changing a lot already in college football scheduling, so we've kind of covered that. But those would be my main two.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, when we mentioned Mahomes, this is totally not one of those. But I'm telling you, KC could use a receiver. Ladd McConkey to the Chiefs. He could lead the NFL.
Oh gosh, he'd get 100 receptions a year in that offense.
Yes. He's there. When he ran the 4.39, I texted him. I said, "Ladd, congratulations. You've just been drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs." And I've also heard that Joe Burrow loves Brock Bowers and is begging the Bengals to trade up and get him. So just a plug for my Georgia boys there.
I'm not a Georgia boy, but I think Brock Bowers, it might be the most surefire home run pick. Whoever gets him, like, you ain't worried about it. There's always like a left tackle in there that would also fit the bill. It's the safest pick. Brock Bowers is, for me, as safe a pick as there is in the first round of this draft. Does anybody think that Brock Bowers is not going to excel at the next level?
No doubt. All right, I'm going to come with some examples here. Lucille Bluth, Evelyn Harper, Colleen Donaghy, and, of course, Estelle Costanza. Best mom.
So it's Mrs. Costanza. Is this even a contest? I come home and my son is treating his body like an amusement park. I don't think there's any contest. You can't beat Mrs. Costanza. You cannot do it. And having to put up with the temperamental Frank Costanza and having to watch him break down the different sizes of a bra as George is getting ready for his job as a bra salesman. The D is the biggest, by the way. I don't think there's I don't think there's any. Who was the first one you mentioned?
Okay. Did you ever watch Arrested Development?
I didn't get into that show. I hear it's hilarious.
The originals, it's Seinfeld qualities. Lucille Bluth, the mom, Jessica Walter. I watch.
Oh no. We lost Jeff mid-sentence in the great TV moms, none of which I think can hold a candle to Mrs. Costanza. Oh, that might just be a sign from above. Jeff just ran, his membership just ran out. Mad Dog, we might need to just close shop based on that. I'll tell you what we'll do. I will mention Cypro Rentals. Hold on 1 second, Jeff. When renting equipment, it's important to have local, easy-to-do business with friends in the industry who carry only the newest equipment and create efficiency for you and your project job site. The team at Site Pro Rentals can do just that. When reliability, service, and transparent pricing matter, you need to use Site Pro Rentals. Call 972-RENT-NOW. That's 972-736-8669 for better equipment rental. And now a man who looks very good in a bulldozer, Jeff Dantzler. Jeff, you with us? I see you adjusting the camera. Can Jeff hear us?
Hang on, Mike. I've lost you.
Oh, you're here. I hear you.
I'm going to try and reconnect here.
Oh, we see you. I'm looking right at you. I'm hearing you. But you're not hearing me. All right. We'll see. We'll give Jeff one last chance. Do want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest installment. Want to thank Jeff Dantzler for sitting in for J.C. Sherbert. We'll be back next week. We'll continue our guest train, if you will, or guest derby. Got a couple of guys pinpointed for that for next week. We'll talk about the NFL draft by then. It will have come and gone, and where some of the conferences rank in terms of that. We're all done with spring football. We'll start kind of recapping the top programs and the SEC programs and the SEC and what happened with their spring. Jeff, are you back now?
I am back.
Okay.
One of my friends tried to come, but no, what I was telling you, you would love Arrested Development, the original season.
I've been told.
Lucille Bluth, Evelyn Harper from Two and a Half Men. And I also thought 30,
she's great.
I thought, 30 Rock was quite brilliant. I don't know if you ever got into that.
I didn't. This is before Alec Baldwin killed somebody, right?
Yeah. And Alec, I'm staunch conservative when it comes to politics, and Alec Baldwin is not. The character he plays is a staunch conservative. He is
it really?
Oh, his name's Jack Donaghy. Anyway, his mother in that has a few brief appearances named Colleen Donaghy. She is just wonderful. So I was throwing out there a few, but I mean, Estelle and Frank Costanza, I always thought that would have been the spinoff from Seinfeld that could have hit.
Yes.
Costanzas.
The Costanzas. I couldn't agree more. And they have both since passed away. Jerry Stiller. And what's the actress? Who's the actress?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. She'll always be Estelle Costanza.
She'll always be Estelle to me as well. But they have both since passed on. But the voice alone, which I cannot impersonate.
The doll episode.
Oh, man. All right.
Why don't you get a new shirt?
Let me ask you one question on the way out. You get asked this all the time. I get asked this all the time as play-by-play guys. The game that will always stay with you the longest, the one that you have the most fond memories of having the opportunity to call.
To do play-by-play for, probably in 2001 in baseball, we beat Coastal Carolina to win the regional, and we had been bad for a while. We went on to the College World Series. We had a great player named Jeff Kepinger, and he had hit for the cycle the night before, and he went 5-for-5 with 3 home runs and had the 2-out, 2-run homer to give us a lead, 8-7. And of course, it was, we were at home, but we were the visiting team. You know how goofy that stuff is.
So
we still had to get out of the bottom of the ninth at home, which we did. But that's one I'll never forget. And as far as just being there in person, I mean, when we beat Alabama to win the national championship, Kevin Butler and I doing the postgame show afterwards, it was just remarkable because it was as happy as I've ever been. And you know, just have come so close so many times, and for it to have been 41 years since that national title. And Mike, as you know, we were knocking on the door time after time, but just knowing how much that meant to so many people. Our college show, we could have gone till 9 o'clock in the morning that next day. I think we finally shut it down at about 3:30, but to be there and be a part of that was incredibly special.
No question. And you hit the key number. I mean, the 41 years, there's going to be a whole new generation that's going to be like, wait a minute, Georgia took 41 years in between national championships. Like, yeah, no, it really happened. Like, they went 41 years. And part of that 41 years involved Ray Goff as the head coach of Georgia football. We can laugh about it now, right? Jeff, always a pleasure, man. I'm glad you could sit in with us. We've been talking about doing this for a while, and if I can ever return the favor with you and Mr. Shanks, I'd be more than happy to do it. So keep on the good fight. We will make sure to tune you in, and we'll make sure to have you back on here on JC and Morgan.
Well, you're the best, Mike. Always love being on with you anytime, and you're just the best. I'm so proud of you, so happy for you. Go give Summer and Baxter a big kiss for me.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. It's Jeff Dantzler, straight from Athens, joining us here on JC and Morgan. That'll do it for us. For Mad Dog, Phil Molinax, appreciate everybody tuning in. You can check out the website, jcandmorgan.com. On every social media platform, JC's been doing an outstanding job giving you some of the clips of our many interviews over the last couple of months, really. And we'll be back with JC next week. So long, everybody.